Hello, this is Anthony Mace.
And Rachel Mace.
And we are...
Diorette?
We are in New Hampshire.
We're in Keene, New Hampshire.
It is pretty Keene and peachy.
It's a really, really cool town in New Hampshire near the Vermont line. There's a lot of significance to this place, I think, from a libertarian political perspective, but it's just a really cool place to be regardless of your politics or who you are. There's a co-op literally two blocks from our hotel, and the hotel is really beautiful. It's an historical landmark. It's kind of amazing here. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's a nice contrast from where we were yesterday. A little background is right now we are on a road trip. We're doing a circle of the states, starting from Boston and ending up back in Boston after going to New Hampshire, Vermont, Rhode Island,
Connecticut. Maine, yeah. A lot of states.
So yesterday we spent a decent amount of time in Salem, Massachusetts.
We did go to Salem, Massachusetts, and it's really interesting that we went there because... and I don't know if this is your feeling, but I'm a little disappointed. I was hoping for more of a historical kind of air to it, but it's very kitschy. It's very touristy, and I mean, I get it. It's a tourist hotspot, but it doesn't have that kind of historical significance I was hoping it would. How about you?
Well, I was disappointed because I don't know if you're aware of the situation, the witch persecutions in 1692. And 20 people died. They were called a witch, and there was no due process. They hung some people. There was one guy who was crushed, and
because he wouldn't plead, right, or something to that effect, he wouldn't plead guilty or not. He wouldn't respond to it.
He wasn't respecting their process, which they weren't respecting the people, and so they crushed him.
It's a very somber kind of event, actually, that I think people overlook when they talk about it, because it's more than just that. It, you know, this is one of those things where people could try you. Like, the trials themselves included people's dreams. Have you ever woken up mad at your significant other because of something they did in a dream? This is literally putting someone on trial, with death being the penalty, based on a dream you had. It's kind of insane.
Yeah, well... One thing about Salem is, like you were saying, it was very kitschy, but they weren't giving the respect that situation deserved. There was a statue of the lady who played Bewitched.
Oh, right, yeah.
And there's a lot of, buy incense, buy these brooms, buy these witch hats. And if you know anything about it... they were not guilty, and it took a couple hundred years for them to decide, hey, these people aren't guilty of being a witch.
I think the last convictions were overturned, or the last people were pardoned or cleared in 2001. I might be wrong about that, but that's incredibly recent. That's the same year as the 9/11 attacks, and for it to take that long to really clear that up, that is just... bone-chilling. So when I went there, I came with a certain level of reverence because of the due process aspect. And it's almost like, so it's like a Disney World level of kitsch. And I'm like, well, I get it. Like, you know, I'm not going to stand in people's way from trying to make a buck on something that's going to bring tourists in. But it seemed like this was an opportunity for the people of Salem to really drive home that, hey, we don't want to do that again. That's kind of nuts. And I don't know, I didn't really get that from Salem. And then to the contrary, as soon as we came into New Hampshire is such a different bird. It really is. Everything about New Hampshire is just about the people and what they want and what they do. And the first restaurant we went to had Bitcoin accepted. It's different.
Yeah, we're... from the D.C. area, and I think that was the first time I'd ever seen any place except Bitcoin.
Ever. People in D.C. mock Bitcoin, or they haphazardly invest in it. But to see a place actually take cryptocurrency was wow, that's unique.
Well, and what was the name of that place? Was it Street?
It's called Street. It was in Portsmouth. I don't know.
Portsmouth?
I'm going to say it wrong and offend people. So let's just say it begins with a P. It's on the coast. You know where it is.
Yes. Yeah. Cheers to them. And you know, figuratively and then quite literally. I'm about to drink my Live Free Drink 603 Wood Devil Double IPA. This one's for Street.
Oh, yeah. That looks tasty. It's very, it really is New Hampshire-y. It's got like a...
Well, I'm feeling very, I'm living very free right now. I'm living my best life.
Oh, I'm going to try it too. Let's see how it tastes.
It's a double IPA.
It's hoppy.
Very hoppy.
It's very hoppy.
It's very light. It makes for a good breakfast beer.
Well, that's basically what you're doing. So, yes, that would make sense. So, that kind of brings us up to, like, we come to Keene, and I'm kind of, like, hoping that we have a conversation. Like, why Keene? Why did I make that the stop? Because I did the itinerary for this because I like to make itineraries. I'm one of those kinds of nerds. And I put Keene on it very intentionally, very specifically, and not just because they have a co-op, which we did go to today, but because I had a very specific interest in this particular town. And that's because there was a group of people that came together for the Free Keene project, and there was even like a protest where someone was smoking marijuana. And I was just very fascinated by that kind of libertarian-esque form of protest in this town. And the entire state of New Hampshire has drawn quite a bit of libertarians. So wanting to come here, wanting to come somewhere where they specifically set out to make a statement was important. You know, it's kind of interesting to see how those elements come together. What's your take on this area, Ant?
The scenery is amazing. The people are extremely friendly. There's a great sense of community. You don't tend to have that in a lot of large cities.
No.
So it's a small town feel, and it's just a nice place to be. I'll definitely be back.
Yeah, it really is interesting to be here and interesting to see how people operate. Very friendly, like the coffee shop this morning, people knew each other's names, and that's not something we deal with very often. And one of the cool elements of this town is that a lot of what makes this town amazing is just the community investment, not necessarily the government investment in this town. I feel like the people are really what makes this town fantastic. What do you think?
Well, you know, any town is just a location. It truly is the people that make up the community and give it the vibe and the personality that it has.
So, well, moving forward then, let's talk about New Hampshire as a whole. There are a ton of libertarians running for office in New Hampshire, and Election Day is Tuesday. And one of the things that I thought was really amazing is if you go to lp.org and you go to their website and you look at how many libertarians are running in each state, New Hampshire is cleaning house. And I even know somebody who is running as a write-in candidate for Cheshire County Probate, Jackie Mason. You'll never find a more passionate or just focused person in the liberty movement, I think, than Jackie. She really understands logistically. She understands from big strategy perspective what the Libertarian Party needs to do to make an impact. So if you're in Cheshire County, New Hampshire, you should write in Jackie Mason for probate. And on that note, also Daryl Perry is running for State House, I think, in that district. I'm not, you know, forgive me, I don't live in New Hampshire, and I've been so ingrained in Virginia libertarian stuff that I haven't really gotten outside of my local box and looked around. But I do know that Jarvis is running for governor, and I don't want to say her first name wrong, but I want to say it's Giletta. And if I said it wrong, I'm so sorry. But I've seen some protests on her behalf about her not being allowed to debate. And keep it up, guys. That is so inspiring, because that's one of the things that the big duopoly has, is that they can lock other candidates out of the debate. And we need to change that, because they know that as long as other people can't get in, they don't have to talk about the issues. They can just talk about their beef with each other. And I don't know, Ann, I would rather hear about the issues.
Oh, definitely. For Virginia, we have Stephen Porter is running.
Yeah, Stephen Porter is running in our district, District 11 in Virginia. Very deep blue district. I think the last time there was an election, Connolly, our Democratic representative, ran unopposed. Unopposed, because it just assumed that he's going to get it because of his political party. And I think no matter what side of the aisle you sit on, whether you're left, you're right, you're libertarian, you're green, whatever you are, you have to feel a little uncomfortable with someone running completely unopposed. That just doesn't feel democratic at all.
I was surprised when speaking with people that a large population didn't care. But there also was a large percentage of the people that did care.
Yeah, but the amount of people, I think what was truly disturbing, like you said, is the amount of people that didn't care. They're like, oh, well, we know who he is, so we're okay with him winning because he has a X rating from this lobbyist group and Y rating from this lobbyist group. And I'm like, well, it doesn't matter. Does this person truly represent you?
Yeah. You know, not getting out, you know, before getting out there and speaking with people, I would have thought that nobody would be okay with that.
Yeah. 95% of people would be my guess that would not have been okay with that.
But it was, you know, 30% of the people, 40% of the people.
Yes, I would say about a third, a good third, a solid third of people did not care. In fact, thought that was better. They're like, well, we know who we are. And I'm like, who is we? Because I live in this district too, and I don't feel like I was included on that conversation of the we. And I'm pretty sure a lot of George Mason students would agree, because that's also in that district. And I don't think we were included in that whole we.
Yeah. I was pleasantly surprised, though, that the number of D's and R's that were upset and were just happy to sign a petition saying, yeah, somebody needs to be, even if he's not my party, then somebody needs to be on there as well. And that was a pleasant surprise to me.
Yeah, you know, this brings us to like the whole, can libertarians win an election, and why are they trying? Because they're never going to break through the duopoly. That is very toxic thinking, and it's thinking that's been embedded in people's brains due to the strong marketing that the duopoly has. It's a marketing campaign. You guys are never going to break the duopoly. You're just taking votes from X and you're giving them to Y. And I say X and Y because both sides have accused libertarians of taking votes from them. But the thing is nobody is entitled or owns your vote. That vote belongs to you. And there's all, you know, you're going to say that it's always been this way or that way until it changes. And the day that it changes is the day that it changes. And no one will have seen it coming except the people who wanted the change.
Well, the people are trained that way. It's like taxes. It's not really your money. It's the government's money first. Well, it's not really your decision. It's the D's or the R's. It's their vote. It's not really, you know, you don't have a choice. You're either going to vote one way or the other.
But the thing is, every election, no matter who it is that's running, you do have a say. And if enough people get out of the thought process that their vote belongs to the D or the R's to keep the other side from winning, if enough people just stop thinking that way, it would be shocking to see what happened. Because you only need a small amount of elections where a libertarian wins to change the entire political landscape of the United States. Because the conversation would no longer be D's and R's. It would no longer be their side versus our side, Crips and Bloods, or whatever you want to call it. Because honestly, I really feel like the D's and the R's run like gangs. And no offense to gangs, because they probably have a better honor system. But it feels like this has become gang mentality. And if you're not part of their gang, you're part of the rival gang, and everybody's caught up in this. It feels violent, almost. the rhetoric is borderline, and in some cases escalates to violence. It's too much.
Both sides call the other side evil. Then you have people wanting to, oh, I'm choosing the lesser of the two evils. Well, don't vote for any evil. Vote for liberty.
Vote for somebody who isn't going to be the lesser of any evils, even if you have to write in somebody's name. Don't vote for the lesser of two evils. Vote for somebody worth voting for. If you're going, and you know who would have won the election against Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton in 2016? Had everyone's vote, including the non-votes, been counted? None of the above would have won, because more people didn't vote than did. And that speaks to the quality of candidates that are coming out of both sides. But there is a chance for those people to get up and just say, you know what, to heck with it. We're going to go in an entirely different direction. We're going to vote for an entirely new group of people. Those people, in a heartbeat, in a blink of an eye, could change the entire political landscape of the United States. Tomorrow. Well, Tuesday. But
I'll drink to that.
Yeah. But nothing, there's never precedent for something until there's precedent. That's how the world works. It's not like everything will stay the same forever. It won't. The one thing that's consistent is that change will always happen. And change doesn't mean that it's a campaign slogan for the literally the same thing that the other parties have done forever. Change is really different. It's radically altering how our political system works. I mean, I would say that's pretty accurate. You?
Oh, definitely. Change includes unintended consequences. Change includes intended consequences and the backlash. So it's going to happen one way or the other, but we need to get out there and vote vote for liberty and make sure that whatever the consequences are, the people get to choose their own consequences.
What do you think, when you were out petitioning, was the biggest misconception of what libertarianism is, from your perspective?
Libertarian was the block that the Democrats or the Republicans put in place to steal votes from the other side.
Right. So I even looked at one of the things on Jeff Dove's page, and it even said that Kane or somebody had put the candidates on the ballot to steal votes.
No. What's actually going to happen is we'll have a good candidate, and the people that weren't going to vote for any evil, lesser or not, are going to vote for our guy.
Right. We're going to get the people who wouldn't vote otherwise. And for all you get out the vote people, that's a good thing. Because at least they're voting for someone. If you want them to vote so bad, why do you want them to vote for people they hate? That is something I don't understand. Did you, when you were going through the political process this year, did you encounter anything that just truly blew your mind? Like, just, you couldn't understand it? Was there, like, ever a moment?
I couldn't understand it, but it's the lack of civility. A lot of people like to yell and get angry for no reason. And I really couldn't understand that. I've always, you know, maybe it was the way I was brought up, my family, I don't know, but, you know, accept people, accept their differences, and hear them out, and try to find common ground. And, you know, I grew up, you know, politically, your religion. I grew up that you try to find your commonalities, your similarities, and, you know, embrace diversity and thought, and it will better you, it will better everybody. And I'm not seeing that anymore. I don't know what happened from, you know, 20 years ago to now, where everybody's different and that makes you evil or a victim or a savior.
Yeah, and I don't understand the process myself. It's it's one of the things that kind of baffles me is that everyone, well, actually, let me answer that question for myself, because this really puts it into perspective. One of the things that truly baffles me when I'm collecting signatures or working a booth at an event, one of the things that just truly is obscene is people will tell me that the reason that we can't have a libertarian and let people have liberty is because people are too stupid to take care of themselves. Literally, word for word, what people will tell me is people are too stupid to do good things, to do the right thing, to take care of themselves, which is why we need to vote for either side. And that comes from both sides very regularly. And I'll ask them, I'll say, are you too stupid to do the right thing or take care of yourself? Oh, no, not me. I was like, well, am I too stupid? Well, I don't know you. But just looking at me here, dressed to the nines and getting signatures and whatever it is I'm doing, and I'm in grad school and I have a job, am I too stupid to make decisions for myself? Oh, I imagine you're not. Then who is it? And it's always this superiority over a lower class of individual, which I used to belong to. I grew up very poor. And so they're basically telling me that I was the person who was too stupid to take care of myself at one period in time. And that blows my mind.
Yeah, I also grew up extremely poor.
Poorer than me.
And it wasn't me who was too stupid to take care of myself. What it was regulation that was designed to keep me poor where I was. Yeah, I guess I didn't break child labor laws, but you know, when I was 14, I had to get out there and work and make money so I could eat, so I could buy clothes, so I can keep the power on. I had to do that. You know what would have stopped me? Government regulation.
Yeah, I mean, you did so whenever, whatever means you could, which means, you know, going door to door and offering to mow lawns or whatever you had to do, but...
You can't do that now because there are cops shutting down lemonade stands.
Yeah, but the thing is in some cases that provides children the upward mobility and the entrepreneurship that they need to transition their house from living below poverty line to everybody in your family is doing better, much better than they ever did.
My family, I'm one of five siblings from a single parent household, a single mother. And statistically speaking, this shouldn't happen. So we've all grown up. We all have decent paying jobs in one of the more prosperous parts of the country. We all have families. We're all well adjusted. None of us are in prison.
Yeah. I mean, statistically speaking, or speaking on behalf of those people that think that we're too stupid to take care of ourselves, we should never have been able to do that without a litany of government programs and government guidance and et cetera. There should have never been an upward path for us on our own. But the reality is I've never received a single college grant. I didn't even complete high school. I had to do that on my own. I had to homeschool and then get my degree later because I was pregnant. I didn't have this beautiful structured program that gave me upward mobility. I had the determination and desire to never live a certain way again. And that is what gave me the drive. And I will never stop.
Yeah. We're not successful because of the government. We're successful in spite of the government. In spite of all the regulations that we had to combat to get where we are, you know, we've made it. And, you know, hopefully, you know, we'll keep going even with, you know, future regulations. But, yeah, I'm glad it's, you know, past 7 years, because the government might hear this and say, they might not say, oh, congratulations, you made it, you did good. What they would hear is, oh, you worked while you were 14, and where's our tax money?
Right. Like, oh, how much money did you make mowing those lawns? And that's the thing. When you're a minor and you're just making money to help your family, I remember I made a little bit of money to pay for things like tennis shoes and clothes. And at one point, I was really ambitious, and I decided to take ice skating lessons. And I I saved the money up myself. But, you know, I'm actually glad it is past a certain amount of time, because the government would have been like, you earned that under the table? Where's my cut? I was 12, dude. Like, seriously. I just wanted ice skating lessons, and my mom did not have the money for that. I had to figure out a way to make it on my own. And doing that has set me up to understand that there are pathways to get where I want to be. Even if I hit a roadblock, just keep going. Just keep envisioning yourself as a successful person. And I think that's what the Libertarian Party talks about. And not being 100% self-sufficient, because it's not about being 100% self-sufficient. I think a lot of libertarians are misconstrued as people who believe that everyone should be fully 100% autonomous. That's actually not true. It's that when we communicate and collaborate or do things together as a group, we want it to be voluntary. Because the difference between voluntarism is coercion. And you shouldn't have, if it's a good idea, if banding together as a community and doing something is a good idea, you shouldn't need the government to force you at gunpoint to do it. And that truly is the difference. I believe that we could come together and have groups that focus on sustainability, and groups that focus on making healthcare more affordable, and groups that focus on all these great things. I am not opposed to any of that. And that doesn't make me a socialist or communist, because I believe in that, in a different world, in a voluntary society where people come together and say, hey, we'd love to form this group so that we can get better rates on this, or better, or negotiate better contracts for this. People already do that. The Libertarian Party doesn't pay me a single dime, and I already spend my time collaborating and working with them to help them achieve their objectives. And I would do that for a ton of things. I do it for charity. Nobody forces me to buy toys for children in need. I do it on my own at Christmas time because I envision a world where people just do nice things for each other without having to be forced. And if you think that your government tax dollars are some sort of charitable giving, they're not. If you look at the federal budget, most of your tax dollars fund three things, like 90 some odd percent probably. Social Security, which is an unsustainable program that now takes a huge chunk of our entire tax revenues to sustain. Medicare, which is also an unsustainable program. And when I say unsustainable, I don't mean that nobody should take care of these people. I mean that it's not sustainable. At one point, the people who need it the most won't be able to get it because there won't be any money for it. And then the third program is military operations. We spend an absolutely obscene amount of money on our military, more than China, Russia, and several other countries combined. It's too much. What are we going to war with?
And, you know, these are all things, you know, we need to keep in mind on Tuesday.
On Tuesday.
Election day. You know, get out there, vote, you know, make the real change that needs to happen. Is we just need to clean house.
We just need to clean up this, I would call it a sense of entitlement that politicians have over our lives and our money. I don't think that a politician could run my life better than me. And which is why, even though I'm not a big fan of the voting or the political system that we have set up now, I'm still going to go in to vote. I'm still going to vote Libertarian. And where there isn't a Libertarian, if those candidates who are Republican or Democrat haven't done things that truly promote liberty, I will write in somebody before I vote for them. It'll probably be you, honey.
Thank you. I'll vote you in as well.
Oh, no, we should vote for you.
Vote for me?
Consistently. So that at least you get two votes. I don't want to cancel each other out voting for each other. I want, write in Anthony Mace, Virginia, yeah. Where you don't see a Libertarian.
Well, it truly is the people that know what's best for themselves. Politicians can't run your life better. I mean, look at Marion Barry. Look at Anthony Weiner. Surely, I mean, it should
Roy
be.
Moore.
They couldn't run their own life, but yet they were insistent upon running your life better than you could. And that clearly wasn't the case. So also think about that when you get out there to vote.
And then, like, the final nugget I think I would leave everyone with, since we're getting kind of high in there on the time side, is everyone talks about, like, did you see what the president said on Twitter, or the politician X or Y said on Twitter, or the justice this or the justice that, or the hearings on Capitol Hill about that. The fact that this dictates so much of our lives is a signifier that politics has become too important. Maybe we take away power from the government so that these things, when they do happen, are less important. I mean, look at how much that ran people's lives. Could you even go like a day without hearing about it? In your own workplace? I know you, like me, work for a group that's heavily political, so you hear about that stuff day in and day out.
You can't go anywhere. You can go to an airport and you'll see the news. You can go to a doctor's office and see the news. You go to a deli, that there's the news. And it's, you know, they're beating a dead horse. No matter what anybody does, good, bad, or indifferent, you'll hear the worst of it.
And the world is ending. It's always ending. And like they all say, it's every election is the most important election of our lives. And it really is, ironically, a lot like Salem. It's like mass hysteria.
Yep. It's everybody calling for a lynching of the other side.
Basically. I mean, it really is absolute hysteria. People, if you just objectively look at headlines and you objectively look at, I don't even watch cable news anymore, but whenever I run into it at the airport or anything like that, the headlines alone are so doomsday, you know, sensationalism. There really is no room for reason and logic in the discussion. And we need to disempower that. What do you think?
I do. The media and their sensationalism, they can say Trump is the son of, is Trump the son of Satan?
Question mark.
And then you'll hear, you know, 2 days later that whatever, you know, let's say it was NBC that said that. You'll hear that NBC was quoted as their source, Trump is Satan.
Right.
Or Bernie Sanders is Satan.
These are obvious extreme examples used to make a point, but I'm sure if you look at the news cycle today, you will find a very eerie reflection of that extreme example.
It's a big game of telephone, and nobody knows what's going on, but what's really going on is the government's in a struggle for power, the power to take your money.
Right.
And that's really what it is. I know we're preaching to the choir here, but...
Yeah. I mean, we're just going to leave you with that. We're going to go and tour the rest of New England. It is beautiful. And you know what's crazy is for all the doomsday and people are angry and rioting and then crying in the streets and mourning, I don't know, whatever it is the media says, it's not actually what's happening in the United States right now. You know what people do every day? They wave to their neighbors, they go to work, they come home, they have dinner. It's not as terrible as it seems. You don't have to dress up as the Handmaid's Tale and sob on the steps of the Supreme Court because your hometown is likely the same as it was 5 years ago. And that the real war right now is for your money and control over your life. And stop it. Just tell them that you can run your lives better. You just want to get up in the morning and go to work and then come home and spend time with your family and have a can of beer. Or maybe if you're someone who enjoys marijuana, smoke a blunt and then go to bed. I don't know. But does it really need to be the government's business what you do when you get home? To who you come home to how many children you have, to where you work and how you work.
Yeah, what happened to my body, my choice?
Exactly. Libertarians take my body, my choice, and they take it to the logical end point, which is my life, my choice.
Nobody should tell me what kind of smoke I put in my body, what kind of liquid I put in my body, what kind of object I put in my body. That's for me. I know what's best for me.
And so hopefully on Tuesday you vote what's best for you. Have a happy rest of the weekend. Have a happy election day. And just no matter what, if you're hanging out with a Republican, Democrat, Democratic Socialist, just have a round of beer and don't talk politics for 5 minutes. Have a good weekend.
Bye.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.